Hey, it's Matt here. Let's talk a little bit about Gather Content. They help people who build websites to work with their clients to plan, organize, and collaborate on web content. You know what it's like to gather and organize content. It's one of the hardest parts of any project and probably the thing that takes the longest. You've got the control over the design, but when you work with other people on content, that's when things get tough. And you're copying stuff and it's keeping the HTML formatting and you're having to get rid of all that. It's such a headache. Now, that's where Gather Content comes in. It's an application you can keep all the content in one place, can collaborate with clients on changes and get approval and all that sort of stuff. You can set reminders and due dates so people know exactly where the project is at. You can break the content down so people know exactly where the content will go and the context of it and how long it should be. And then once you're done, you just export that content right into your WordPress installation, or you can use their API or one of their plugins if WordPress doesn't work for you. So use the discount code Web Agency Podcast, you'll get a 15% off this discount for life. And check out their content guide, webagencypodcast.com/content guide, a handy little ebook about exactly what we've been talking about, managing the content process. You'll definitely learn a lot. Check it out. Hey, welcome to the Web Agency Podcast. You're listening to Matthew Newton, and this is episode number 61 with me, my co-host, whose New Year's resolution is 1080p, Ben Newton.
Oh, I swear I've heard that resolution joke before, but it's still good. It's still good. if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, this is the podcast for web agency owners, web designers, developers running their own show and trying to improve what they do. Matt, what's been happening?
All right. Oh, geez, man. Last week I said I was going to launch a book, launch a YouTube channel, and change the name of my business and launch a new website to suit. So, not a very ambitious fortnight, but...
you mean two-week period?
Two-week period. So I've got the website up, and it's not perfect, but hey, it'll work for now. And then I've got the book would... It's more or less done. I realized very, very late that there probably would be professional sort of editing software out there. So, like, because what happened was I was reading my manuscript and I bumped into me using the same word twice in a row just by accident. And I realized that there would be software that would show glitch, like, errors like this. Mm. So I've spent $35 on Pro Writing Aid. You can check it out, prowritingaid.com. This is probably the best money I've ever spent. And it's just helping me a lot with certain sentences that I wasn't sure. Like, you know those murder sentences you might write in the blog post and you're like, "Arr!" Yeah, it was drilling in on those sentences and like showing that they were crap and showing how they were crap.
Yeah, and that's the best bit, isn't it? Showing how they were crap.
Yeah, basically there's this thing called glue words and it's a bad habit. So glue words are the 200 most common words in the language and I overuse them. So the reason for this is a perfect example of a sentence that has too many random words, right? So it's all about just getting your English to become more effective and to stop people from sort of starting to fade out of the sentence, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, sometimes you read and you get halfway through the sentence and you just kind of fade out.
Yeah.
And I noticed that some of my sentences even were causing me to fade out. So yeah, that was really cool. So, and also I've got the cover designs happening. I've got five or so different versions working on at the moment with various people and don't like any of them so much at the moment. But yeah, it's all happening. Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Can't wait to see it, man.
Hopefully it's by the end of this two-weekly period, it is up. And we're really hammering to make this YouTube video go. Was meant to be recording last week, but going to be recording tomorrow. And yep, just going to start out making some simple, basic tips kind of marketing videos. For example, probably the first video is going to be a tip to how to integrate Instagram with Twitter in a way that doesn't hurt your effectiveness on Twitter, because a lot of tourism businesses integrate Instagram with Twitter.
Right.
And so yeah, stuff like that, and then build up to sort of more ambitious kind of videos from there.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Exciting days. I've got another week, I think, now. So what's the date today? We're recording this on the 5th of January. Shall we say that?
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, it's another a week until I start officially with this new marketing company that I'm working with. So it's exciting. I'm sort of just pushing a lot of stuff out at the moment, and yeah, just trying to sort of sign things off so I can get started there and give that plenty of my attention. And one thing I did do in the last, actually just a few days ago, I shut down, you know, I said a while back that I had like a sports branding business for like grassroots sort of level sports. Yeah, I shut that down. So that's gone. Its website is no longer, etc. But I've sort of moving things across to my own personal brand. So it's really bennewton.com.au when that's all ready to go. So I've moved across my blogs, which were a good source of engagement and website visits. So that's what I've been doing.
Very cool. Sweet. So we have an awesome conversation coming up with Jonathan Stark. Let's dive into it.
Sounds good.
Sweet. So we have Jonathan Stark sitting with us right now. How are you going, Jonathan?
Very good. How are you?
Awesome. You're all the way from Boston.
Boston area. I'm actually in Providence, Rhode Island, which is about 45 minutes south of Boston.
I liked your attempt at a Boston accent there, Matthew. Boston or whatever it was. Boston.
Boston. I need to have a 5-episode ban, I think, for that one. So, Jonathan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I am a mobile consultant based in Providence, Rhode Island, and I help retail brands with mobile strategy. So making the leap to mobile, whether that means, you know, having a half day strategy session where we talk about the future of mobile and what they could do now to get from where they are in a sort of desktop centric world to where they need to be for a mobile clientele, or training sessions where I take their web team and skill them up on how to program for mobile instead of desktop specifically. Or I also offer retainers where on a monthly basis, people just basically pay to pick my brain. So those are the things I have kind of going on in the consulting world.
Yeah, cool. So you said mobile consulting for retail. Does that mean e-commerce only, or like specifically, or is it, retail brands that maybe don't sell online as well?
Typically, it's... I'm trying to think of an example where someone didn't sell online. Pretty much everybody sells online these days, don't they? But typically, it's household brand names. Usually, companies that have a brick and mortar presence, but not always.
Yeah, I guess the question I'm asking is, I mean, I went to your website just before, and it says your past clients include, Time, Entertainment Weekly, Nokia, mm-hmm. and Intel. I was just wondering, about, right. I wasn't sure. I guess in my head about maybe Nokia and Intel, how that would be an e-commerce thing, but...
So it's they're more B2B, but I do see them... It's true. They're probably not as much of a retail. They definitely don't have a brick-and-mortar presence, really, but, you know, a company like Nokia does have to make decisions based on what's going to sell through their retailers to the end consumer. So it's companies that do have... some kind of customer touch point, like an end user touch point, whether it's a sell through or direct, like a Staples or a CVS.
How did you decide to specialize on mobile consulting?
Oh, that was an easy answer. I was watching the keynote in 2007 when Steve Jobs announced the iPhone, and I was like, that's what I'm doing from now on, period.
Wow.
Yeah, simple as that. I was like, that is the thing I've been waiting for.
That's okay, cool. You're almost looking for an opportunity at that point.
No, I wasn't looking. I was I had been making a series of transitions, sort of marketing focus angles. So I had, back in the day when I first started billing myself out as a consultant, I worked for a firm that was well known for using a product called FileMaker, which is a desktop database program that is from Apple, even though it's cross-platform. And it's a powerful tool, but I knew Have you guys used it?
Oh yeah, I used it before. It was interesting.
My old boss used to use it. He built his time management and invoicing software off in FileMaker. It looked like a headache to me. As far as getting into it, but that's because I'm not a coder.
Yeah, if you're a coder, you won't like it. But if you're a subject matter expert, you'll love it because all you need to know is what you're trying to get done, and it lets you do it. and it's cross-platform. It has a million advantages, security baked in, windowing baked in. It's amazing. But it's also very limited. And I knew that when I was doing that, I was making a nice living. I was working at a popular firm. I was the vice president. But I knew that what I really wanted to do was web stuff. And I can't explain why I wanted to do web stuff, but I knew I wanted to do web stuff. And while I was there, I learned PHP. I wrote my first website, which, in fact, is still in operation today. And, I was learning the sort of LAMP stack web stuff. And then I went solo I left the FileMaker firm and I went solo when we had a little bit of a disagreement about whether or not we should continue billing hourly or switch over to value-based. And I went solo, created a value-based consultancy where I did FileMaker web stuff. So I was sort of straddling the line between the two things in an effort to maintain my reputation and leverage my reputation, but while moving into a new area. And after a certain point, I became, I had a solid clientele doing web stuff, FileMaker web stuff. And at a certain point, I felt comfortable shutting off the FileMaker part. So I took all that stuff off my website. And then I had a successful solo consulting web operation. And that's where I was when the iPhone came out. I was like, oh my God, this is, because if you remember at the announcement, the way you made apps for that thing was with HTML. And
really?
Even though they, he said, it was at a developer conference. Steve Jobs announces the thing. This is the iPhone. And the way that you program for iPhone is to make web apps. And you could almost hear every Cocoa developer go, what? And every web developer jump for joy, because the thing, I don't know if you remember the announcement, but it was breathtaking. There were a half a dozen moments during the demo when the crowd just lost their minds. It was wow. How old are you guys?
I'm 28. When did that come out? I'm trying to think. Is this about?
It was 2007.
So yeah, okay. So I was actually not in that sort of I wasn't in the web at all. I was sort of studying film and television. So
yeah, I'm an old fart. So it's like, so I had already been in the game for 10 years when that came out, and I was like, I don't care about anything else except for that, and totally jumped into it. I explored Cocoa, hated it. Objective-C, hated it. A lot of people love it. I don't. And stayed with web, went into mobile web stuff, and just one thing led to another. I was blogging about it, and I was tweeting about it, and I had written a web publishing book already, and then I got a deal with O'Reilly to do a mobile web apps book for iPhone, and that was very popular. So that basically fueled the next 3 years. Yeah, the next 3 years of customers basically came from that book.
Wow.
So basically, to get that book deal, you'd obviously lay the groundwork in terms of the content you were putting out in the first place, and it was a natural fit for O'Reilly to even get that deal in the first place.
Thinking back on it, it wasn't exactly that. So I had written a book already for Sam's that I did get in exactly the way you just described, where I was blogging about FileMaker web development. There were really only two other people in the world who you could even possibly consider experts at that, and they were not well known because all of their expertise was getting shared on mailing lists and it wasn't exposed to the public. I was the only one really blogging about it. So when Sam's was looking for someone to write on that topic, they went to me immediately, and I accepted the deal because I knew writing a book was good for business. And also that it was going to be very popular, and wrote it. And so then I had that track record, and a couple of years went by, and I knew I wanted to write another book. And the iPhone had recently come out, we're probably going up to 2009 at this point. So it was announced in 2007, came out in 2008, roughly. And then in 2009, I was ready to write another book because my previous one had come out in 2006. And I had an idea for a book. I don't even remember what the idea was. And I was at a party talking to a senior editor from O'Reilly, completely random. And I said, hey, I've got this idea for this book. What do you think? And he's like, hey, well, I'll run up the flagpole and see what people say. And he took the idea, and I hadn't written it or anything. It was just an idea. And so he took it and shared it. It was like weekly meeting. He was like, hey, I met this guy. He's got this idea. And they were like, nah, but see if he has anything else, because he's been an author before. And, you know, see if he has any other ideas. So the guy came back to me and he said, nah, that didn't float, but have you got any other ideas? And I said, well, I've got this idea for an iPhone book. And he was like, oh, tell me more. And I said, well, I think that the iPhone is going to be huge. And I think that web developers and web designers are going to hate Xcode, and they're going to hate Objective-C, and they're going to hate Cocoa. And I wanted to get on there. I wanted to be an app developer on iOS, but it's absolutely horrible. For a web developer, it's a horrible experience, because you're going to compiled code. Like, web developers don't like compiled code. So, okay, but there's got to be a better way to do this. You know, like, I already know how to make these interfaces with HTML and CSS. Like, why can't I just do that and create an app? So, like, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Why don't you just make a web view? And I tried to do that. I didn't have the skills. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with PhoneGap, but...
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so PhoneGap is basically a site-specific browser that you can wrap your web app in and install it as a native application. And I had that idea. I was like, I wish there was just I could make my own web browser that I stuck my website inside of and created this application with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, because that's what I love. And sure enough, this company called Natobi created an open source project called PhoneGap, which did exactly that. And that's where the book opportunity came in. I said, I think I want to write a book about PhoneGap where I teach people how to write HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that then gets wrapped as a native application, but they can continue using their existing tools, and they can continue doing all the things that they already love and are comfortable with, and leverage their skill sets, and can keep growing their business as web developers while also being able to create native apps for iOS. And he was like, well, let me take that to next week's meeting. And I think within like 30 minutes after the meeting, we had a contract.
Wow.
All right, and so you wrote the book, and I guess happily ever after, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been translated into 7 languages, and, you know, people asked me to sign it. It shows, you know, it was a huge success.
Yeah, I actually just recently read an online ebook about how to become a visible expert, and they studied a lot of visual, what they called highly visible experts, right? So the people who have total international recognition, completely outside their field. So like your Jim Cramers or whatever his name is. And then the people who have national or international recognition within their field, and then all the way back down. And so what they approached a lot of these visible experts, and they said, what has been the best ROI in terms of return on effort for you? And they said books. That was the number one thing that came back, writing a book.
Yeah, books... So I think that's changing, though. But yes, that has been true for me. But I do think it's changing. And in fact, right now I'm
self-publishing.
I am self-publishing now, and it is the content that I'm putting together is valuable. I know that it's valuable, and I know that people are going to benefit greatly from it. But it is an experiment for me, because I could have easily gotten O'Reilly to publish it for me, but I wouldn't have. So because there's like a lot of administrative overhead, and it's like a different kind of vibe. And as much as the editorial process brings to the final product, which is amazing, I almost feel like I didn't write the books, because the editorial process is so helpful. But I just, like, right now, like the stage of my life, I had a book deal with a third book deal with O'Reilly, and I was just like, you know what, this doesn't feel right to me. I don't want a printed book. Code is a weird thing to print, and I just want to do it differently. So now I'm working on an ebook called The Mobile Retrofit Guide, which helps, you know, just gives people like 10 simple things that they can tweak on their desktop website to make it more mobile friendly. And the thing about that, an ebook, is that I can keep updating it. Like, I can add stuff to it as I get feedback from listeners, from readers. And I can link to code samples on GitHub that people can use directly.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And it's like, I mean, print books, I'll write another print book for sure, but I don't know if I'll write another print book that has code in it, because it feels weird.
Yeah, that feels like the two don't really marry up in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's just not the best. Like, I'm doing this, I think this month I'm going to do, O'Reilly has me doing a video series for them, like an 8-hour video series on building apps that run everywhere and building apps with HTML and CSS and JavaScript. And I feel like video is a little bit, it's definitely a better format than books, print books, because they, because it's just way more helpful. You get a lot more context in the, around the development environment, and it's not just like a, this disconnected code example and screenshots that just sit there. Like, half the stuff we're talking about has like user interface animation. It just doesn't translate in a book. So anyway, so I'm looking forward to how the video series does. The ebook, if you want to call it that, I really I'm kind of shying away from calling it an ebook because it's a combination of things.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a guide. So the mobile retrofit guide is an experiment for me, but it's already, you know, the pre-orders, it's already selling in pre-orders. So I'm pretty confident that it will sell well. And I'm 100% confident that it's valuable information just from my consulting work. So it'll be great to see how that goes.
Nice. So switching back to something you said earlier, actually, you said that you had a bit of a disagreement with your last employer where they wanted to stick with hourly rates, I'm assuming, and you wanted to move out with value-based fees. So
yes.
Do you still believe that that is such an important difference that it's worth leaving a company for?
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, I think that hourly billing is a cancer on professional services. It's horrible.
All right, so, let's hear it.
All right, so let me tell you, I got to give the backstory, though. So I was at this firm. I had a great relationship with the owner. I had a great relationship with the developers. My job was vice president. So what my daily routine basically amounted to calling up the developers, making sure that they had logged their hours, and getting in, you know, and getting back to clients who were complaining about the hours reports on their invoices, making sure that invoices were getting settled every Monday, creating systems so that it was easier to enter hours, creating reports that would alert me to the fact that hours weren't getting in. Everything I did revolved around hours, hours, hours. And so we got to a point in the firm, you know, time goes on. I get to a point in the firm where money was tight and we had to consider contingencies, one of them being letting someone go, which we didn't actually have to do, but I just had to decide. It was up to me, like, who do we let go? And so I'm looking at the roster. We had like, you know, 10 or 15 developers at the time. And I'm like, no matter how many times I looked at it, I was like, we're going to have to fire our best guy because he's the most expensive salary-wise. And he works so fast that we can't even keep him busy. So like,
wow.
Like a day a week, he's just sitting there doing nothing. Because I'd be like, on the Monday meeting, I'm like, okay, let's do the resource allocations and send out projects to this person and that person. And be like, okay, here you go. And then, you know, the next Monday, he'd be like, how's that going? He's like, oh, I finished it on Thursday. Be like, okay, great. So now on the other hand, we had a guy who was literally making exactly half the salary, who took roughly five times longer to finish anything. He was like a level up from an intern. Great guy, not a great developer, or, you know, he's new, and he's super personable, and customers liked him. And so I wasn't getting any complaints, and he was billing out crazy hours for simple stuff. And I was like, this is absurd. I'm going to have to let go our best guy. Like, our best guy is the junior guy. You know, he's making us the most money. And so I was like really conflicted about this, of course, because of the, you know, the fact that we were going to have to like fire an awesome developer, because that didn't make sense. But the other thing was, I was like, look how much money we're charging these customers for this intern, basically. And that doesn't feel right either. And so I thought about it for like a week or more, and I'm like, I can't figure out how to fix this. And then suddenly it was just like literally the literal light bulb epiphany. I was like, oh, the problem is that we're billing by the hour. We're like measuring this arbitrary thing, and we're taking all these measures to address the symptom, but the root cause is that we are charging our customers based on some arbitrary measurement, which might as well have been pixel. We could have been charging by the pixel. It would have been just as absurd. So I said, I explained this. I researched a little bit. I found a small number of other people, and none of them technical, who were kind of already had this realization, mostly lawyers. And And I read up on that a little bit, and I brought it to my boss, and I said, dude, we can't bill by the hour anymore. It's wrecking us. This is the problem. This is the reason. Every single problem we have is because of this. And he's like mentally, he got it, but in his heart, he couldn't envision a way around it. He's like, he couldn't envision to make the transition. So I was like, all right, that's cool, but I got to go because I can't do this anymore. Because now all of a sudden it felt unethical to me to be acting like this. Uh-huh. So I said, all right, that's cool. I'll go solo. And so I went solo and I started a company specifically doing value-based fees, fixed bids for projects, FileMaker web development. I started blogging about it, got a book deal, et cetera, et cetera. So it was great. I love it. It hasn't, the first year after I went solo, my salary or my income doubled. And then every year after that, you know, I don't know how many years it's been, like 5 years after that, it's gone up every year. So it's, it definitely works.
That's really cool. I mean, I find it hard. I mean, do you come from a design background or a development background? Like which one would you say, if you were to choose between the two, are you a developer or a designer?
Definitely developer.
Developer.
Yeah.
Do you find that, like, especially for things like other updates or, you know, things where, you know, your time spent on something can vary between 15 minutes and, let's say, 2 to 3 hours on something. Do you find you struggle with maybe value-based fees for that? Or do you even deal with that sort of stuff?
You mean when someone calls me up to do something that takes 2 hours?
Yep.
I would not take an existing client or just like someone out of the blue?
Existing client. So let's say an update to a website, for instance, that they can't handle themselves.
Mostly these days I don't do, I do some development still, but it's mostly just to inform my strategy work. But in the day when I did just development, I would have that customer on a maintenance program where they were entitled to a certain number of phone calls per month. If I thought it was really going to be a problem, but I kind of reject the question in a way, because the way that I work with customers is that we focus on goals, not tweaks.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not about making a copy change here and there, or changing a color, or making this a little bluer. It's about decreasing customer service phone calls. It's about increasing conversions on the mailing list signup page. It's about increasing sales. It's about getting more job applications taken in through the careers page. It's not about little picky things. So if I'm going to take on a project,
yep.
Yeah. If I'm going to take on a project, it's like, okay, cause they'll come to me with exactly what you just said. Oh, we need to change some stuff here to make this a little prettier. And I'll say, okay, that sounds cool. Why do you want to do that? And they'll be like, oh, because, you know, we're looking at our analytics and a lot of people are bouncing off this page. And we think that by doing this, it's going to make a lot fewer people bounce off the page. And I'll say, all right, how about we just focus on decreasing the bounce rate off of this page? And I'll worry about how to make that happen. We can collaborate on how to do it, but I'll be responsible for doing it. And if we actually decrease the bounces, then everybody's happy. And that's the approach. Like if you are taking direction from a client where they're telling you to fix a typo and change a color, you're basically a mouse. You know, you're a keyboard at that point. You're not, it's like a difference between being a laborer, an expert, or like a freelancer and a consultant. It's a hard way to make a living because you're kind of a commodity.
Yeah, true. It's funny. I recently bought my wife Seth Godin book for Christmas, and mm-hmm. he talked about if all you are as a designer is just a cheaper way to get good design, mm-hmm. then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
and it's really challenging, I guess. Yeah, I find that a tough one for me because I'm a very personable sort of customer service sort of guy. So I've got some clients that are pretty strong. You know, some artist type people that. You know, they're really quite finicky with this sort of stuff, and they will sort of say, it has to be done, you have to do it this way.
Right.
And it's hard to not feel like a commodity for those sorts of, clients.
Yes. Yes. I totally feel you, and I've been there. And there's multiple layers on which that can be addressed. One is not taking the customer.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And saying like if you can't get down to it, honestly, if the person is using you like Photoshop, there's no value in it for you. I mean, if you need the money because the mortgage is due, fine, take the customer. But there's no future in that kind of work.
Yep.
You know, it's a commodity. In fact, the outsourcing options are so good now that you can't make a living like that. As if you're really an expert, if you really know what you're doing and you think you're good at your job and and it's demonstrable, then you should really expect more from yourself than changing a hex code in a CSS page.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the one layer, the most abrupt thing is to say, look, I'm not doing this kind of work anymore. I'm not working for you anymore. The next layer up is like, dude, is this really how you want to be spending your time? Shouldn't you be, you know, if you're an artist and you're trying to sell your work or whatever the customer is doing, wouldn't it be better to focus on that? And then, sorry, my dogs are going. Wouldn't it be better to focus on that and let me achieve your digital goals? And in order for me to do that, I need to know what they are. So let's have a conversation about that. And if the person's not willing to go there, then again, probably not a great fit. But if they are willing to go there, then all of a sudden you have potentially a great customer, a great partnership, where you say, all right, what would this mean for your business? And you can literally stop thinking about this, dude, and I will worry about keeping your sales at this particular level and, you know, move on. And that is a much more valuable thing than editing a text file on a web server.
That's true. I mean, the example I'm thinking of in my head is I've got a jewelry client. They've been around for 20 years, got a sort of a well-established brand within Melbourne, which is where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the homepage design went to I think 15 drafts. So, and we're not talking about like a long page. It's a very simple page, but just some of the small stuff was just killing me. You know, I just, you know, really drained the life out of me. And I was like, this is crap. The thing that I probably should have realized when I first talked to them was they said, you know, we've worked with two other designers and they couldn't really get what we wanted. And I probably should have had a moment then where I said, they're probably looking for a mouse or a keyboard, whereas more than that. But then again, I probably took it in a lot of ways in a way to pay the mortgage. So
yeah. So as long as you're cool with that, so I'm not against that.
Yeah.
Like, let's be clear. Like, if you, I have cash flow issues still to this day. So like sometimes it's a slow month. Like holidays are actually very slow every year. So, you know, if you take on a gig, but if you realize that it's, you just need to realize what it is. You're just keeping the lights on with that gig.
Yeah.
It's going to be hell. It's going to suck. Just do what they ask and move on. Don't get into the conversations about like, oh, well, research shows that if you put more, you know, padding between these elements that people, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't want you for that. They didn't hire you for that. And the reason they probably flamed out on the other two designers is because the other two designers were probably sticking to their guns about bad design, good design. And they were like, they ended up firing them because it was a constant fight.
Yeah.
Now, if you were going to push back on them, which probably would not have worked, but if you were going to push back on them, it would have been like something like, why are you redesigning the homepage? It seems fine to me. And they would say, well, our competitors redesigned their homepage. And then I would say, as a trusted advisor, I would say, well, that's a dumb reason to design your homepage.
Yeah, yeah.
You're just going to follow them all the time? Like, there's no business outcome for you to, you know, or maybe they would say, our analytics started dropping. We recently redesigned it, and now it's in the current state, and we noticed that our traffic has dropped way down, or our sales have dropped way down. Now you've got something you can work with, because they're saying, okay, they come to you, they say, we want you to redesign our homepage. Okay, why? Because our sales really dropped since with the current design. All right, so let's worry about your improving your sales. You guys are jewelry experts. You're not design experts. Why don't I worry about design? You worry about sales, and I will make your website sell you more rings or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you could do that? Like, would you feel confident saying that you could actually increase their sales with a better design?
Well, I sort of did. I mean, they actually had a flash website.
Oof.
And it was built in 2009, if you can believe. So that's actually, you know, that's a very late time to get a flash website. But, mm-hmm. And, you know,
so they're basically getting no mobile traffic.
Yeah, yeah. And so they basically said, you know, we want e-commerce, we want all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, they made about, I think, 60K in sales off the first year off the e-commerce website. And that was part of what I did and part of what other people did as well. And for them, it wasn't a huge... It was sort of replacing their wholesale, which was going down quite dramatically. It sort of replaced that. So they're sort of now, you know, on a sort of the same amount of total sales. But the... Yep. the if the website wasn't there, it would have, you know, sucked for them. I guess they would have, you know, had $60,000 of sales. Just, that would have, you know, they would have had to fire
lost opportunity cost. But, right. Well, so to get back to the original question was, what do you do when people are nickel and diming you with stupid changes?
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you have started from a place where you are... doing a value-based bid, if you've attracted the right kind of clients, and this one sounds like they're making enough money that they could have paid you a pretty penny for your services. So this is not like a local daycare. You know, this is a vendor, like a vendor that does decent number of sales.
Yeah.
So you could, you know, if it was positioned in a way that you weren't redesigning their homepage, you were increasing their online sales by a factor of, well, they had none, so a factor of infinite.
Yeah.
You could almost charge anything under the amount of the first year sales, and it would still be a humongous win for them because it's way, way more than they had. And then, you know, you would base your fee on some multiple or some fraction of that amount. So if they were going to make 60, you could easily get away with charging 20 or 10 to do the redesign as long as it was effective. And then the... when the, you know, let's say it took you 6 hours or it took you 10 hours or whatever. So now again, there's no meetings about what it's going to look like. That's not up to them. There's,
yeah. So you don't take any, so you wouldn't recommend taking any feedback at all about design, you know, like if, let's say you go, this is what we think this design should be. You would just sort of say, well, thanks for your feedback, but, well, you wouldn't even show them at all. Or like, obviously they're going to see it at some stage, you know, it's their website, but...
Right, but I just refuse to get into the 15 revisions thing. Like if I'm getting paid like $30,000 to do 2 weeks worth of work of web design work, I don't care if they call me in 3 months and ask me to change a typo. That doesn't matter to me because I've already made a ton of money.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll just do it. So there's that. The upfront stuff before you do the build, that go the back and forth, the 15 revisions, that I do not allow that to happen. It's like, first of all, I'd fire the client. I'd be like, I'd just take myself out of the situation because it's a losing proposition because it's a bunch of people sitting around in the room arguing about stuff when really all they should do is ask their users and be done with it. And the way to do that is A/B testing. So if it's just a giant waste of time for everyone to argue about, like, oh, well, my wife looked at it last night and she thinks it should have more blue in it. And I really think the logo should be bigger and all that stuff. Like,
oh, designers, yeah, it was a clusterfuck that way. It was a sort of like,
yeah,
there's about three family members involved in that. One of the ladies owns a business. It's her business, but she's brought her brother and sister into it. And then she's also got a lady that does, I don't know, accounts and a few other things. And then yeah, so I had sort of about four people giving different directions.
Classic.
And then you have an artist guy who comes in about two-thirds of the way through and said, well, why are we really doing this anyway? And it was always just like, are you kidding me? Like, how do you manage anything in this business?
I mean, that's a disaster client. I mean, you've got like the family business and you could have all kinds of like emotional baggage underneath the fighting about what point size to use for the text that has nothing to do with the website. So if I didn't just extract myself from the situation, I would say, look, I would just keep pulling people back to the goal. What's the goal here? The goal here isn't to fight about what the point size is. The goal here is to sell more rings. So let's stop talking about this, get the website up and start A/B testing things and see which thing works better. And then we don't have to fight about it. We can just see what works. And then once that thing is settled, we can move on to the next thing and we can move that up the chain until you're selling so much stuff that you guys have a permanent smile tattooed on your face.
I like it.
You gotta, you just can't, you, I mean, if you are walking into a situation and it's, you know, you guys are experts at what you do. I'm an expert at what I do. And if we're going to walk into a situation and let ourselves get sucked down by this like classic BS that we know is going to happen and not be able to confront it and rise above it, I feel like we need to get better at our job. It's like that stuff is so common that it's a joke. You know, it's like a.
Yeah, there's blogs about it. There's you know, there's like clients from hell.
Yeah, there's comics,
you know,
about it.
Yeah, it's obviously.
Yeah, it's a, like learn how to deal with it. And not you, but I mean the listeners. Yeah. Like, learn how to deal with this. You should expect this. Expect it. And the way to deal with it is to just be like, focus on goals. It doesn't matter what it looks like. It could look like can I tell you a quick story? So my wife she is a graphic designer, and she has been a design executive up, you know, until we had kids. And one of the things that she worked on was the Sunday circulars for a bunch of large retailers. Do you guys know what those are? That like the Sunday ad in the newspaper.
Oh, okay. So it'd be like a full page ad in the newspaper that just goes on a Sunday or something.
It's like an insert. So it's like a mini catalog printed on newsprint that gets injected into the Sunday paper. I think it might be a U.S. thing, but
does it sort of go around? Here's like the story. Sort of wrap around the paper. I think. Anyway,
it's called a circular.
I'm just trying to
print
my head.
Sure,
enough. I've seen this before, but anyway.
Let's just keep
going with the goals.
Sorry.
It's the goals.
Sorry. So here's the thing. Here's the thing about design. This is a design thing. There was a went to art school, the whole thing. Had a meeting where there were people who were like, no, we want to put these ugly, you know, they didn't say ugly, but we want to put these bursts, these price bursts, like on sale now, 50% off, you know, these like garish yellow and orange jagged bursts with the price. And she was like, but that's going to make the whole thing look so cheap. And they're like, yeah, that's the idea. And all of a sudden she was like, oh, you know, where it's like, yeah. It's a crappy design. And guess what? That translates to cheap in the person's mind. So that's the crux of the problem with the argument in the room where there's like a CEO and the CEO's wife and the sister-in-law and the designer and the artist. Everybody's got a different agenda, but the business doesn't have a bunch of different agendas. The business wants to sell more necklaces. So build the site, A/B test the options, and pick the one that sells more necklaces.
So I really like this philosophy, but I'm assuming that this is best implemented from the very, very first interaction with a client to really focus the heads around and say, look, I'm the kind of guy that I'm just focused on results. I'm not focused on, you know, fiddling with colors or doing pixels or anything like that. If you're willing to work with me to make sure we just focus on goals and the best results, I'm definitely your guy. If you want someone who you can back and forth with on colors for 2 months, I'm definitely not your guy. So doing that sort of thing right up front, do you think that's a good idea, or is there a better way to word it than maybe I did?
I mean, it almost starts before you start talking to them. You know, it starts in your content marketing. But yes, definitely, once they come to you, you need to make that 100% clear. You know, again, I have nothing against people who change hex codes in CSS.
Like, yeah, as you were saying.
I have nothing against that. I have no problem with that. As long as you know what you're in for. You're not going to be the design expert in the room if they hired you to change hex codes. And that's fine. Like, I have no problem with that. But just recognize what you're in for. And don't try and fight it, because you're just going to make things worse for yourself. Just do what they say, because that's what they want you to do. So if they are looking for someone who is a trusted advisor or some kind of partner level person, which probably isn't how they came to you, you can convert them into that. If there's any possibility that their heads will go there, you can actually get them there. Some people just don't want that, but you can get there with people who are open to that by just asking the question, why are we doing this? What's the goal? You know, is it, you know, and just get there. And if they'll go there with you, then they will treat you much differently.
Yeah, actually, I've got a client I took on recently, and I really screwed up the initial interactions because I didn't realize she was going to become a client. And so, because it didn't come through like a traditional source, it came through, like, we're both members of the same forum, and we were chatting, and it just turned in, she was my client. So right from the start, there was just an informality there that I just didn't like. And she was looking for this kind of pixel pusher thing, and I got to a point where I said to her, okay, there's a few reasons why I'm not going to do a change for you. And, you know, the first one is, if it works on desktop but doesn't work on mobile, I'm not going to touch it. It's got to work on both, because mobile is really important. Second one was, if it goes against best practices and what we know does help a website make sales, I'm not going to do it. I'm never, ever going to do anything knowingly to hurt your business. Mm-hmm. But I said, if it's just a small thing like a color change or whatever, if I don't think it's going to have a negative impact on sales, I'm fine to make little changes like that if you want. Now, to me it felt reasonable at the time, but looking at what you're talking about at the moment, it seems like maybe I could have even pushed that further.
I mean, there's a lot going on there. It's pretty tricky. Mm-hmm. But you are touching on something that I read recently that I really liked, which was that it was a designer responding to a client with an explanation for why they were refusing to make the change. And it was like, it was basically like, he goes, I could make that change for you and you'd probably like it. But imagine for a second that I'm your lawyer and that the thing that you're asking me to do is a violation of the oath I took as a lawyer and would get me disbarred. That's what you're asking me to do here as a designer. And it kind of touches on your thing about mobile and your thing about, you know, I won't do anything that I think will negatively impact sales. But, man, the design thing's really hard. But I honestly, I still think the solution is to focus on results, have a way to measure the results, A/B test the changes, and pick the one that works.
Actually, yeah, I'm itching at the moment to jump in with my analogy. You had the lawyer one. I have a medical one. So I say to people, imagine if you went to a doctor and you asked him to prescribe a drug that he knew would not work and would actually probably harm you. If he gave you that drug, should he still be allowed to practice as a physician? Yes or no, right? And
yeah, it's
they don't
exact,
even have
same
to answer
thing.
The question. They're like, yeah, they're like, I get you.
Right, and so, what does it boil down to? It boils down to whether they trust you as a doctor or as a web designer or whatever you are supposedly an expert at. And it's actually kind of easier for doctors and lawyers because they do have a body that regulates them. We don't. So it boils down to basically your social credit or your third-party endorsements. You know, this guy's worked with, you know, whatever, CVS and TechCrunch and Entertainment Weekly, therefore, you know, he must know what he's talking about. But if maybe they don't, you know, maybe the person has not written a book or hasn't done those things. And maybe they just found him on Fiverr or whatever, Elance. They're not going, you know, like, where's the trust come from? The trust has to come from somewhere. So, you know what I mean? So like whether it happens, you know, your question was, does it have to happen to me in the first interaction? And I think it's better if it could happen even before that, if they're in fact attracted to you because you're this way, that's the best possible situation. But once you're on the phone with them, you have to be clear.
Yeah, it could reasonably happen, say, years before that interaction, isn't it, really? Because if you're learning the knowledge and you're starting to blog and all that sort of stuff, that sort of cumulative sort of brand that you build up over time really just goes into that interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a podcast right, you know, I'm guesting on your guys' show. Someone in the audience is hearing that I don't bill by the hour and they're going to be intrigued by that. And if they ever have cause to hire me for something, they're already going to know that and it's not even going to be a discussion.
Hmm. Exactly. It's funny. It's making my head sort of head blow up a little bit. It's about even the way you present yourself on your website. I mean, for a web designer, you're often talking, you've got visual examples, you've got folios of what your stuff looks like. And if I go to your website, it's just there's text. There's no like, this is an example of what I've done in a picture. And it makes me go, shit, like if people are coming to my thing and they're saying they like the stuff that I do because of the way it looks, whereas, because that's the first thing that people look at, whereas maybe I should be talking, like putting literally just...
Is it? No, it's not the first thing to look at. The first thing to look at is the Google results. And guess what? I'm at the top of the Google results because my page is so freaking fast. So, and it's mobile friendly, which is now part of the rankings. So I ask myself all the time, like, what should I put a picture of me on stage somewhere talking on my website, like a big, huge megabyte photo at the top of this hero image, or maybe like an autoplay video in the background, like everybody does. But I can't.
Airbnb nowadays, yeah.
Yeah, everything these days has that autoplay video in the background of the header. And, like, I could do that. I know how to do it. I've got the video. But what would it add? Like, that would cause scrolling. I could put parallax scrolling on there to annoy people as they tried to read my site. But it just doesn't. I would do it if I thought it was going to impact sales in any meaningful way. But honestly, I think it would just detract. And yeah, I mean, my site is like one step away from a plain HTML.
Yeah. I guess I was saying more about my own site is you know, I've got a folio pretty well front and center. It's very visual, that sort of stuff. And you're right, though. The Google search results are the first thing that people see. And it makes me just wonder if rather than putting anything visual about those clients, I should just say, this is the client, this is what I achieved for them. If that's the way to present yourself as a trusted person for increasing, you know, sales.
I think it is.
Which for a graphic designer is obviously so hard, because it's like the product of what you do is the increased sales, but it's like the medium that you use is what's usually the focus.
Well, it depends on what you want to do. So if you want to be an icon designer for home screen icons on iOS, you go on Dribbble and you do put your most unbelievable, beautiful work on Dribbble or on Fiverr, and people will hire you because that stuff is amazing. It's hard. It's a rarefied skill. But that it doesn't sound like that's what you're selling yourself as. It sounds like you're selling yourself as a consultant or an expert or a trusted partner who makes a thing that works, not a thing that looks pretty. So if that is the case, then I do constantly goof on my designer friends who have pictures of stuff they've made on their site. What's the Steve Jobs quote? It's design is not how it looks, it's how it works. And so I'll say to my friends who espouse that, which I think is a good thing to espouse, I'm like, well, then why are you showing pictures of everything when you should be explaining how you made the businesses better? Like, there should be case studies. Maybe there are some graphics in there, but I think it would be much more powerful to have testimonials where people said, you know, after we worked with Ben, our sales went up 50%. Who cares what it looked like?
Yeah, exactly right. They trust you from that. It depends. You might do something that they don't agree with design wise, but then they go, well, I mean, it's going to lead to better sales, so we might as well, I guess we'd better trust him. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Etc.
You know that situation where you're like, oh, I would love to put this in my portfolio, but the customer completely destroyed it at the end.
Yeah.
You know, that shouldn't matter, because if as long as the sales went up or as long as the goals was reached, it doesn't matter that it looks like junk if it works. So as a web designer, which I think I think that a real web designer should and does worry about how stuff actually works and that goals are being met on the website. And the best ones do that. And it makes no sense to me for them to show pictures of what they did, you know, in any serious way. It should be much more about the testimonials from the customer where they said, Ben changed my business. He came in here, you know, we talked and we got down to the goals of what we wanted to do, and they were achieved in an unbelievably fast amount of time for a fair price. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, Jonathan, this has been a great conversation. I know we've gone a bit long here, but is there anything additional that you wanted to add to this conversation for our listeners?
I guess I'll just hammer on the hourly thing again. Like, really, you really got to ask yourself, if you're billing by the hour, are you really partnering with your clients, or are you insulating yourself from the fact that you're bad at estimating? And I think if you are honest with yourself, you're going to come up with the latter. So if you want to move up the chain from being a freelancer and a laborer to just, you know, works with their hands, if you want to do that and move up to more of a level of a consultant or an expert or a trusted advisor, you got to start putting your money where your mouth is, doing fixed bids. If you're smart, you'll base them on value to the client and start working that way. And I guarantee you that you'll have better work relationships and you'll make more money and you'll be a lot happier.
Cool. So how do people check out your stuff?
JonathanStark.com. Yeah. If you head there,
Jonathan, there's everything there. Jonathan, Jonathan, Stark.
Yes, exactly.
Just need
Thank
to
you.
Clarify that because there's, yes. there's a lot of variations, right?
There's a lot of ONs. I think they all redirect to me anyway.
Okay.
Nice. Hey, Matt, can I just ask one more question, Matt?
Yeah,
just, there's something I saw on Jonathan's website. A curious little question. You said the iPhone is going to look like a fax machine compared to what's coming in the next 3 to 5 years. I just was wondering what Jonathan was thinking was going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years.
Watches will be next, and when I say watches, they don't even I it's a sort of a weird. I should say wearables, but it'll be watches first. So watches are going to be next, where as a designer, we are going to have to start designing for experiences that are across screens and are on weird screens like e-ink screens or maybe on a band that is curved. There's like going to be all sorts of weird design challenges just in watches as a subcategory of wearables. There are also going to be cross-device interactions with TVs more and more where we're sending content, websites, videos, audio, audiobooks, podcasts from a phone to a TV. There's just going to be so much interactivity just in the personal computing space and the consumer electronics space between audio, video, smartphones, TVs. It's just going to be... It's going to be fun and ridiculous. So, right now the iPhone and other smartphones like that are very much general purpose computing devices. And I think what we're going to see, the big trend is going to be that we're going to get more smaller, not necessarily smaller, but more focused computing devices that are specific to a task so that people can pick and choose things that are appropriate to their lifestyle.
That's cool.
Awesome. Thanks well, thank you so question. Much for coming on, Jonathan.
My pleasure.
And do you have a Twitter or anything that anyone can follow?
Yep. I am jonathanstark.com. I'm pretty much jonathanstark.com. Jonathan Stark everywhere.
Yeah, cool.
So Jonathan Stark on YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook.
Awesome.
The benefits of being a web granddaddy. Awesome.
Yep. I got the gray hair to prove it.
I do too, but I'm only 20 awesome. Anyway. Beautiful.
All right. Take care, Jonathan.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Bye.
All right, Ben. So that was a pretty interesting conversation.
Yeah, got a lot out of it. I think it's funny. Just the one of the funny things was obviously, if you've in a situation as a pixel pusher, that is what it is. Just don't fight it. Just if the mistake was made earlier. If there was a mistake, so it is what it is sometimes.
And you got a couple of ideas out of how to massage that situation and to what limit you can massage it. Like it's very hard to re-pivot a relationship halfway through.
It's true.
But I guess you can ask good questions and gradually get them to refocus on other needs, I guess. There's potential there.
Yeah.
But yeah, highly valuable, and thanks once again for Jonathan for coming in and sharing those thoughts, because it just goes to show how much of it is a mentality thing.
That's true.
It's all a mentality thing, really.
Yeah, absolutely right. After the show, after we finished recording, he did say he forgot to razz us about our terrible Australian chocolate. He said, it's just too good. So I'm clearly need to get some feedback there about the best chocolate. Do Americans think that their chocolate's the best? I'd like to know.
I believe so.
I probably think everything's the best in America.
Yeah, I was just about to say, is there anything they have that they don't think's the best?
We have the best Australians in America. We've got the best Australian.
If you think about it, they probably do have some of the best Australians in America.
Yeah, it's true. Most talented.
Because so many successful Australians wind up in America for one reason or another. Probably because the Australian marketplace can't afford them.
Our kangaroos are the strongest. They can leap the highest. Our koalas are the cuddliest and cutest.
Well, as everyone knows, there's broadly two types of Americans. There's the type of American who's like, America! And there's the other type of America that's like, I apologize for that guy who says that about America. All countries are good. I love traveling, I hablo un poco de español, like that, right? And so obviously if you listen to this, we get that you're probably cool. We're just razzing on the rest.
I never used the word razz.
I never used this word razz, and then Jonathan said it, so then I said it because Jonathan's cool. So
raising, I can raise you.
Yeah.
R-A-Z-Y, not Z. Why? Okay, I can't even talk properly.
Yeah. Anyway, we love America. Everyone knows we love America. So, just before we finish this episode, I want to recommend something that's called "Becoming a Visible Expert: A Guide for Professional," and that's where the title tag runs out in the Google search. But basically, it's a free ebook that I just downloaded last week and read, and I mentioned it in the interview actually about how there's different types of visible experts, and they did an analysis on people who've gone from zero to high level recognition for their expertise in a very quick amount of time, and it goes through the different methods that those people use to really accelerate their career prediction. So I would definitely recommend that to any reader of ebooks and any listener to this podcast. Yeah, I found it really exciting.
That's really, man. I'm pretty interested in that. Might take a look at that.
Do it. Do it for sure, Ben. Absolutely. And if you're listening to this show and you are, go check it out. Becoming a Visible Guide. Totally recommend it. Obviously, check out Gather Contents Guide. Go to webagencypodcast.com/content guide, and they have a really cool 56-page guide about how to manage the content process as well. Anyway, so Ben, how do people follow you on the Tweetmobile?
Add us on LinkedIn. How about that?
Yeah, add us on. Yeah, that's a good idea actually. Add us on LinkedIn.
Maybe we can every week and go through some sort of different social network that people can add us on. Then we'll run out after about five.
Yeah, we have to start. We'll have to join Pinterest.
I'm on Pinterest. So I barely use it. I just couldn't find enough. Everyone. I couldn't find enough floral arrangements that I liked.
Yeah, I found it's really lucky on the interior decoration sort of thing. If they improve the interior decoration category of Pinterest, I will be back. But at the moment, it's a bit missing on that
lucky
on that side. So we'll be linking to Jonathan's website from the show notes, also to this Visible Expert Guide and the Gather Content Guide. Go to webagencypodcast.com/061, and everyone have a great week.
And we'll catch you next time.